Before we jump into this week's episode, here's something cool. It's an unusual 15-second quiz that can pinpoint and eliminate your number one profit-killing mistake. Once you do this, you'll find out how you can risk as little as $25 to make $100. I took the quiz myself, and the results surprised me. It only took 15 seconds, and it's free for MoneyTree listeners for a limited time. The website is moneyquiz107.com. And it's run by our sponsors, Profits Run. Again, that website is moneyquiz107.com. And now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Money Tree Investing Podcast. This week, we have Linda P. Jones, who runs the site Be Wealthy and Smart. Welcome to our podcast, Linda.
Thanks, Miranda. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and jump right in. We're going to talk a little bit about the dollar, about the US dollar, and kind of where it's going from here and what you need to do to prepare yourself for different possibilities. So first of all, Linda, what is your opinion about what's next for the US dollar? I mean, it's been really strong the last few years. Do you think the strength is going to change? Do you think the strength is going to keep going? Do you think it's going to crash? What do you think is the future for the US dollar?
Well, I think a combination of those things, you know, first of all, the dollar has been strong because many other currencies have been weaker. So they like to say it's the least ugly house in the neighborhood. So it has issues of its own. And the main issue is, of course, that our government has had quantitative easing, which is a fancy term for money printing. And we've created a lot of debt. Since the 2008 crisis, our debt has basically quintupled. So we have, you know, now $18 trillion worth of debt, which is really hard to kind of wrap your head around because, you know, people hear millions and billions and they think a trillion is sort of in that neighborhood, but it's really not. So let me just give you an example.
Okay.
If we took $1,000 bills and we stack them as high as $1 million would be, it's about 8 inches tall.
Oh, that doesn't seem very much at all, does it?
No. We could spend through that really quickly.
Yeah, you're just looking at 8 inches of money. That's like nothing.
If you had $1,000 bills $1 billion tall, it would be about the height of the Washington Monument, about 600 feet.
Oh, wow.
That's $1 billion of $1,000 bills. If you stacked $1,000 bills $1 trillion high, it's not a mile or 5 miles or 20 miles, it's actually 69 miles high.
Oh, wow.
And that's $1 trillion. And we currently have $18 trillion in debt. So the problem is right now the debt has been frozen and has been frozen for about 15 weeks at about $25 million below the legal limit. So we are basically maxed out. Just think of a credit card being maxed out. They are maxed out in our government. And come the end of September, early October, that's when our fiscal year begins in the government. They're going to have to make some decisions, and the White House and Congress are going to have to agree to lift the cap.
You know,
or
they will.
They're going to struggle to pay their bills. Well, yes, to a point. But remember when we had the crisis in 2007, they didn't agree right away. Remember that? It was a shock.
Oh yeah, that's true.
That they didn't agree right away, and it sent the stock market down, I think 600 points that day. So, you know, I think yes, eventually they probably will raise the limit, but I think we're going to have some issues coming up here that are going to cause some struggles. Now, we have had, like you said, a very strong dollar. And because of what the EU is going through with Greece right now, it's also causing the dollar to strengthen because, again, people are fleeing to security and safety. And our currency is the world's reserve currency still. So people do flee to our dollar in times of uncertainty. So as the euro starts to crack, and have problems, I think we could see another push up in the dollar getting stronger. But I do think there's going to come a time when the dollar does weaken and irreparably weakens and continues on a weakening trend for a longer period of time. I just don't think we're quite there yet.
Okay. So, I mean, you kind of touched on this about your main concerns about the dollar and the economy. I mean, do you think that the dollar is going to keep, you know, you said it was going to be keep going, but what happens when other currencies start to catch up? Do you think there are any other currencies out there that could maybe compete a little bit with the dollar? I mean, I know a lot of people talk about like Chinese renminbi. I never say that right.
It's always a hard word to say.
I know, right? Or the yuan or whatever. Anyway, yeah. A lot of them talk about the Chinese currency, but that doesn't really seem like it's a real true competitor really to the dollar when you think about it. And I guess, I mean, you could look at, you know, I mean, the pound's always been pretty solid, but I mean, it's not like a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what do you think? I mean, do you think that there's anything that really could supplant the dollar in the near future, or is that just going to be several years off?
Well, one of the things that's happened is China has spearheaded the effort, along with the BRICS countries,
right,
to start the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank.
Right.
We've heard of that and have talked about that before. And there's now 57 member countries who are joining that. And basically, that's kind of doing an end around maneuver on the US dollar being the world's reserve currency. So we don't have, or we won't have, that exclusive hold on world banking in the future like we used to.
Okay.
And so that is strengthening other countries in a sense. That is giving other options to invest in other currencies other than the US dollar. And there are currencies that I think will hold up better. And certainly China isn't quite there yet, but I think they will be in a few years when we're in serious trouble. And we can talk in a minute about what some different ETFs are and things like that. But Australia has had a very strong currency. Singapore, certainly. Canada has been pretty strong. And even the Swedish Kroner has been a strong currency. So there are some other places to go, unlike Japan and Europe, that, you know, haven't been doing the quantitative easing and the money printing so much as these countries have. But my main concern about the dollar and the economy is that, you know, right now the dollar's strong, so that makes imports really cheap. And that's why we can go to Walmart and buy things as inexpensively as they are. But the more that the dollar declines in the future, whenever it does start to turn the other way, that will make imports more expensive. And my concern is that that will bring inflation here in a big way that we haven't seen in a long time. And so our dollar weakening will not buy as much. And those imports, since we do import so much, and it won't certainly just be at Walmart, but any imports that we have are going to dramatically increase. And so we're going to see inflation plus weak growth, which is going to be really hard for our economy. So I really worry about, you know, some of the future inflation that we're going to see. I also worry about the fact that China owns 20% of our debt. They are the number one debt holder of our country's debt.
Well, and outside of like U.S. like pension funds and that kind of stuff.
Yes. So the 34% of our debt is owned by foreign governments, but 20% is owned by China. 20% of total is owned by China. So if they decide that they're not happy and the dollar starts to fall in value and therefore their bonds are losing value, they can decide to dump those bonds. And that will make interest rates rise here, which could affect our stock market, our housing market, you know, certainly our currency conversion rate and inflation. So that's the main concern, is just what is, you know, if that happens, then interest rates will increase. And I think the Fed is looking at increasing rates in September anyway. So I think we're going to have some issues with that a little bit later. But when interest rates are increased by the Fed, typically that will strengthen our currency. So I think we've got this one more boost up of our currency being strong. We have some sort of a crisis that ensues, maybe issues with our stock market or something that will cause another round of quantitative easing. And when that money printing happens again, I think then we are in serious trouble with our currency. I think that's when things really start to turn, and it gets into that zone where it's really difficult to come back from that.
Yeah. So then what can somebody do, I guess, what kind of investing strategies do you use to, I guess, be wealthy and smart as you're getting, as you're positioning yourself for what could come down the road? Are there any strategies you can employ to sort of offset some of the problems, or just prepare or position yourself to take advantage of what's coming? What are some of your strategies?
Yeah, I think you have to watch the whole world and be nimble and not just be U.S. centric, as we tend to be often as investors. You want to watch what happens with the euro and Greece, and if that whole thing, you know, starts to fall apart with Greece, I think a collapse will probably happen in the euro when Greece decides to default on their debt. And I think
I love how you say when.
Yeah, I think when, not if. And you could profit from falling European stocks by buying ETFs. So there's an ETF that includes stocks in all European Economic and Money Union, which is the EMU countries. Mm-hmm. And that symbol is EZU, Easy Zebra University. And so that would be one strategy. Another would be when the collapse, you know, happens, then maybe shorting the euro, which the ETF for that would be EUO. So Easy University often. And you could also maybe look at treasuries. I think treasuries will get stronger. So you could buy 20-year U.S. Treasury bonds. The ETF for that is TLT, Tom, Linda, Tom. And the long dollar, the dollar gets stronger one more time, the dollar would go up, and that is UUP, like up with two U's, or USDU, so U.S. dollar, U, university, USDU. Either one of those would be a long dollar, so it would be for the dollar going up. And then later on, when the dollar starts to decline, because there is going to come some point where Congress just says that's it. Just like when, you know, it's hard for people to kind of imagine when it's the government we're talking about. But if you just think about credit cards, mm-hmm. and you think about, okay, so somebody got into a lot of debt, and then they got an extension and they got more credit extended to them. But what happened was their debt just increased. They didn't pay it off. They just got more credit, which they used up. And therefore, then they had more debt.
Right.
And so the issue to solving debt is not to grant more credit, because all that's going to do eventually is just going to accumulate more debt. The answer, of course, is to pay off the debt. And as long as the debt continues to expand and expand, it's okay as long as credit is extended. But once it's determined that no more credit can be extended, which credit never gets extended indefinitely, even for governments, then that's when the default occurs. And that's when the problems are, you know, become very big. And that's basically the path that we're going down is kind of a fait accompli, because we're not trying to pay off the debt. All we're doing is expanding the debt. So later, when the dollar starts to weaken, you also have ETFs that you can use to actually gain from that situation. So you can short the dollar. So if the dollar's going down, the ETF value would go up on UDN, which is United Dollar Nation, UDN. You can also short treasuries, which if the dollar is getting weaker and interest rates are going up, you can short the 20-year treasury, which would be TBT, Tom, Betty, Tom. Mm-hmm. You can also buy gold, silver, maybe even the renminbi then would be a good investment at that time. So those are some strategies that you can look for down the road. But I think short term, we're going to see the dollar stronger before we get into this trouble.
Okay, yeah. So, and so finally, we did talk a little bit about some of the stronger currencies out there. Do you think that it's a good idea to invest directly into currencies, get into the currency trading, or do you think that it's better to just sort of get into some ETFs? I know there are some baskets of ETFs and also ETFs that follow specific currencies. So what do you think as far as that goes? Are there some that you like for investing in other currencies?
I do. So as the dollar falls, these other currencies will strengthen. And so I think that the ETFs are the easiest way to participate in that rather than trying to be in the Forex market directly. So things like Australia, the ETF is FXA, like Frank X-Ray An. Mm-hmm. The Chinese Chinese currency symbol would be CYB, so Central Yellow Blue. And Canada would be FXC, so Foreign Exchange Canada. The Swedish kroner would be FXS, so Foreign Exchange Swedish. And Singapore would be FXSG, so Foreign Exchange Singapore Green.
Okay.
Yeah, so those would be some of the currencies that would likely go up if the dollar is going down, just because they don't have the debt that we have. So likely they would strengthen as the dollar was weakening.
Okay. Okay. So do you think that like now is a good time to get into them while they're low and then just sort of ride it out? Or do you think you should try and time it a little bit better?
Well, I do think we're going to have this move up where the dollar gets stronger. So I don't think the time to buy the other currencies is right now. I think you're going to have an opportunity to know when, you know, when we have this crisis and the dollar goes up, I think you'll have the opportunity then to buy into these other currencies. And that's the point where when the dollar's, you know, as strong as it was recently, there's really only one direction it can go from there. So, so that's a good time to buy because, you know, you're really getting in when it's at its strongest, which means, you know, eventually if you believe that it is going to weaken, that's probably the point to get in.
Thank you for joining us today. And could you, for our listeners, just once again, tell us where the best places to find you are online?
Yes, my website is bewealthyandsmart.com.
Okay, before we move into the roundtable portion of our show, it's time for a quick break. Don't forget to take that unusual 15-second quiz I mentioned earlier. It's the one that pinpoints and eliminates your number one profit-killing mistake. Once you do that, you'll find out how you can perhaps make a little more money. Do yourself a favor and go to moneyquiz107.com. That's moneyquiz107.com. And don't forget that trading involves risk of loss and is not appropriate for everyone. Okay, moving into the roundtable portion of our discussion this week, we have Josal Sehi from Stacking Benjamins.
Woo!
We have Andrea Trevelyan from Take a Smart Step. Hi.
Hi.
And we have Andrew Sather from eInvestingForBeginners.com. How's it going, Andrew? I know you get up earlier than I do because you're on the West Coast and I am just on mountain time, but this is killing me. I don't know how you've been doing this.
It's a tough job. Someone's got to do it. You know, I'm here for the podcast.
Yeah, since moving here, I am just struggling with this. So we're going to see if I can get used to this.
Andrew hiked 3 miles to his microphone uphill without any shoes.
Both ways.
In the snow.
That's right.
Really, SoCal gets snow now. That's amazing.
Who knew?
I know. That's fantastic.
Global warming.
Speaking of global things that tend to be in the way, you see what I did there? What do you guys think of the discussion that I just had with Linda P. Jones from Be Wealthy and Smart about the U.S. dollar? What do you guys think is the likely direction of the U.S. dollar?
Well, I'll start. You know, well, nobody has a crystal ball, and we don't know the time frame. So I love Linda, but I disagree a little bit with her time frame. I do think that one important point she made was that a lot of this is kind of inevitable. You know, when you back yourself into a debt position and you have interest rates as low as they are right now, I mean, there are some things that just have to happen if we're going to find a way to safety. So while I'm not big on playing the when is it going to happen game, because nobody knows and people have been calling doom and gloom for the past 3 years, I like it.
Okay. What about you, Andrew? What do you think about the U.S. dollar? Do you think it's a good value position right now?
Well, I mean, it's tough. It's not as simple as is it a good value or not. I mean, when you're looking at a company, everything's out there. All the information's out there and you can figure out pretty much, I mean, you can't know for certain if a tornado is going to hit one of their factories, but you'll know, okay, this is how much they're bringing in. This is how much they'll probably bring in next year. You can make these kind of assumptions. When you're looking at something as broad as the U.S. dollar, it's spanning a currency that's hitting all these different type of markets. Not only are you touching public markets, you're touching companies that are private, you're touching the public sector, all these things where this data gets skewed and you can't know for certain what happens. So I think when you get forecasts and these predictions on the dollar, it's easy to look back in the past and say, well, of course, you know, we start pumping all this oil, of course the dollar is going to be strong. But you notice that those arguments come after the events. And so I think, you know, you look at this debt and people have been saying, like Joe said, since 2012, I remember when the dollar was actually weak and people were saying it was just going to go down, down, down because we have this debt, we have quantitative easing, all these things. Intuitively at the time, that's what made sense. And then you have a new big event come in that actually changes the whole paradigm, something like the great drilling, oil drilling that we've done domestically in this country has done wonderful things for the dollar. Who knows 5 years from now what could be the next catalyst that could actually either push the dollar higher or lower. So while I agree that the debt issue is a problem and it's not good for the dollar, I don't know what the weather's going to be in 6 months. So I don't know what direction of the US dollar is going to take in the next 6 months, year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. And so I think that makes it really hard to trade.
I think you make a good point about how integrated the dollar is overall in the entire global economy. It's not like it does touch all these things, and there are so many factors that can go into the dollar, and that might change if the dollar is no longer the de facto global currency. But right now, there's not really a viable challenger. I know people talk about the renminbi a lot, the Chinese currency a lot, but they're really not that close to being a de facto global currency when you really think about it.
Well, that's a great point. Like I pulled up some numbers, and if you look at the weighting of basically if you look at valuation throughout countries and you look at the general weighting, U.S. takes all countries by far. It has a 40% weighting if we're looking strictly basically a market cap situation, like how much value does a country have. So if you're worried about the U.S. losing world reserve currency status, I think it's a valid concern. But the next closest country is not even a country. All of Europe is at 24% weighting. So we're still almost double all of Europe. And then emerging markets makes up the last 14%. So even if we do lose world reserve currency, the money is still in the U.S. It's because of all the great companies we have in this country. You take that away, you can look at other stock markets. You look at Australia is at a 5,600 right now. Shanghai is at 4,000. The Nikkei is at 20,000. These are all countries that aren't the world reserve currency, yet their stock markets are doing fine. So I think being in the companies that make up these countries is way more important than being necessarily in a country that has world reserve currency status.
I think that's a good point. So what do you think, Andrea? How do you feel about the U.S. dollar? What are you kind of doing with your portfolio in response to what you think might happen?
Well, I am far from a currency expert, far from it. I'm going to kind of agree with everybody else. It's a really hard thing to peg and to predict. I honestly don't do much with my portfolio. When I think about currency, I think, ooh, where can I travel before the dollar gets weaker and it costs me more money?
That's a fantastic way to look at it. Invest in your life. Invest in an experience.
I'm hedging my vacation budget. because I think just it's so hard to peg, and there's so many factors that I'm going to agree with Joe that, you know, I think some of the fundamentals you do need to keep in mind, and I guess, you know, that would be where to look at it from, but I don't do anything with straight up currency.
And what about the rest of you? How do you guys feel about currency trading? Is it something that you would do, that you're interested in, or is it something that, like Andrew, you're just kind of like, yeah, I'm good to hedge my vacation fund, but let's take a step back. So what do you think, Joe?
I just don't go there because, almost like Andrea said, you know, you learn what your strengths and what your weaknesses are, and you can't be great at everything. You know, I love this. There's an analogy from the old Sherlock Holmes books where Watson asks him about some big thing that's going on in the news, you know, that day. And Sherlock Holmes has no idea what it is. And he explains to Watson that his brain isn't big enough to handle everything. He can only handle a few things, and he wants to do them really well. And I think it's like that with investing. You have to lead with what you're strongest at, diversify appropriately around that, just so you don't have all your eggs in one basket, and then try to ignore the noise. And frankly, for me, the Forex market has been the noise. Even if, you know, what Linda says is true, and the dollar is poised for a fall after another up, I just don't know enough about it, and I don't have enough time to put into that. So I have to use my pre-existing defensive measures instead.
And I like that idea of having the pre-existing defensive measures put into place. So what are some of those, Joe? Can you talk a little bit about what are some of the defensive measures that you do put in place in the event that things kind of go?
Well, I use, and we're about to hear Andrew go booyah, because I use trailing stop losses.
Nice.
Booyah! There it is. I think that they're great. The problem with this, you know, every defense has a problem with it, right? And I used to explain this to clients when I was an advisor, was that there's no perfect defense. And the problem with a stop loss is the stop loss hits, which is great because it avoids the down, but there's a chance that it could just bounce on a really volatile day. So you have to decide where to put it so that you don't accidentally get out. And by the time you notice it, you know, the market's already up and your position's already up. The other problem is with the stop loss, I have to be right again, because I have to now I got this cash and I have to decide when the heck to put it back in, which is every bit as difficult. So, but I tend to use trailing stop losses.
Do you do end of day trailing stop loss, or do you do it middle of day?
I do it middle of day.
Okay.
Nice. And so, because of and specifically, and I'd love to hear why you asked that, Andrew, because for me, you know, the news happens in the middle of the day that can send things, you know, send things south. I mean, often they'll happen at the beginning, but I want to, if the market's in free fall at noon, I want to be out.
Do you have like a software or like an alert that lets you know?
Yeah, TD Ameritrade. It's just automatically set.
Oh, so you put your stop loss into the market.
Yes.
Gotcha. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's great, because I think we've made the point before, you could be sipping margaritas on the beach and the your position could crash that day and you have no idea. So it's important to have a system in place to protect you in case something like that does happen.
Yeah, nothing I'd rather not do than sit in front of my computer all day hitting refresh.
Well, I think that's a good point, because what happened a few weeks ago, the trading was suspended, right? On the New York Stock Exchange, yeah. Right? So trading was suspended. I had no idea this happened, because it was Wednesday and I was in the middle, I was somewhere in the middle of Minnesota driving across the country on a move. And, you know, it didn't affect me much because, you know, indexing. But if I had been in a position like Joe where I needed like a stop loss or something else had happened, like not the market suspended trading, but something else that sent it down. I would have had no idea until I got to my destination and was catching up on the news, in which I was like, my gosh, I'm out of it for an hour and trading's been suspended in this New York Stock Exchange. So I think that's a really important point that Andrew makes. Maybe you're not there and you need to have some way to protect yourself depending on what you're investing in.
Yeah. I mean, the way I do it, I'll do end of day trailing stops just because the times we've seen these flash crashes where I remember one time it was, I think Procter & Gamble went down like $50 on a $60 stock and then rebounded really quickly. And it ended up either being a computer glitch or something weird with these high frequency trading scenarios where it just screwed up the price and totally crashed it in a day. So that's my reasoning for using end of day trailing stops. The problem with that is I don't have it entered into the market like Joe. So I have to be a little bit more aware of, okay, obviously I'm not going to be able to check it every day, but if I have a couple of positions that are close, let's say I have a 25% trailing stop, and I have a position that's maybe already lost 20% or 15%, that's going to be a stock that I need to check regularly. And if it dips below that trailing stop, I'm going to need to sell. Luckily, these big moves in the market, even if you go back historically and you look at times where the market has what we call crashed and you see all these newspaper headlines, they don't drop, like stocks won't drop 50, 60, 70%. If anything, you'll see maybe 10, 20% drop at most. And a big drop where a company really loses 50% happens over a longer time period than just 1 or 2 days. So you'll have some time to get out of it, but it's still important, especially if you're close to that trailing stop, to really monitor it. And I've heard of other services, like I think there's a company called Trade Stops that will actually alert you if you trigger a trailing stop position. I haven't used them myself, but I've heard some great things about that. And that's another way you can kind of stay on top of your investments.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So one thing I was thinking about is a lot of us talk about ETFs as a way to easily get exposure to markets that maybe we wouldn't normally just invest in. Like we wouldn't do the Forex trading per se, but maybe we do a currency ETF for exposure to currencies. So what do you think about that idea, Andrea? Is that something you would consider doing? So even though you're not a currency expert, do you think maybe like a currency ETF is like a small part of your portfolio makes sense? Or are you just like, whoa, that's even worse because that's a derivative of something that's not even really investing. So what do you think about that?
I think if I was going to actively invest in currencies, I would probably go an ETF route where somebody who's actually watching, it would have to be one of the active ETFs because I don't think you can do currency without it being active. So I would go for an active one. Just go with that active one. But then I also keep in mind, and we've kind of talked about this before, but currency nowadays is also woven into your stocks because so many companies are global. So when you looked at you look at Procter & Gamble, you look at McDonald's, you look at Johnson & Johnson, these big companies, you know, they're overseas, so they're being exposed to it. So their profits are going to be impacted with the dollar going up and down. So they're doing hedging and everything. So yet again, it's one of those things that it's built in there. You can do more of it, but you're still exposed to it, no matter if you actually are legitimately in currency or not.
Yeah, that makes a good sense. What do the rest of you think about currency ETFs? And if you do want to use them, I mean, how much of a portfolio would you limit it to? Joe, let's go back to you.
I don't do any of it because owning international stocks is enough for me. And I know that you also, because I'm using dollars to buy international stocks, I know that's gonna change my results. But I think for me, spreading it that way is great. I'll say something about some of the ETFs that Linda talked about that actually short. that are short positions. Those, you know, I would want to have somebody like a Linda in my corner who knew a lot about that before I did it, because when you're shorting something, I mean, you're betting that it's going to go the wrong way. And as an example, if you take the U.S. stock market over long periods of time, 70% of the time it's going to go up. So you're betting against the way that things usually, you know, the way the river usually runs. And anytime anybody mentions shorting, I think, man, you got to have somebody in your corner that knows what they're doing. That's an ugly place to get into, and you can lose a lot of money in a hurry.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And finally, what about you, Andrew? What do you think you would do? Do you think you would include a currency ETF or just stay away? You've already got enough exposure.
I mean, I guess it depends how you're trading it. I think in most cases, it's basically speculation. There's just so many factors into going into what makes the currencies go up and down, and not even to you factor in also countries and the way they will start wars over currency, the way they'll position themselves, and all this is all these games being played, not only by companies in the countries, but also by the global leaders as well. I think it's just way too advanced for anybody to really try to profit from. And I think you can just as easily, like Andrea said, profit from a trend that you see that's going to happen by investing in a company. There's some companies that benefit greatly from, let's say, for example, the yuan going higher or the euro going higher. It's not hard to figure out which these companies are. And in the off chance that you're wrong, you'll still collect dividends along the way. And so there's a way to play the currency game without being exposed to the fact that if you invest in this Forex or even in an ETF, it can only go up or down and you won't get any income from that investment. So I think that's an alternative, and that's the way that I would do it if I were to jump into currency. I just like to... Personally, you guys already know this. I like to own the companies because I know those are more predictable and those will tend to go higher as time goes on. So that's kind of my stand on it.
Okay. And on that note, we'd like to remind you to go ahead and check out moneytreepodcast.com for more information on investing and to listen to other episodes. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and go ahead and leave us a review or send us questions. We love questions. We love to do shows on occasion that are entirely devoted to reader questions. So if you have a question that you want answered, please send it along and we will do our level best. And remember that you can check out each of us on our own sites, takeasmartstep.com, investingforbeginners.com, and stackingbenjamins.com. And of course, my site is plantingmoneyseeds.com. Remember, nobody else will take care of their money as well as you. So use it to invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.